Chapter 71. With a coronet which the disappointed girl was never to wear, and containing his aunt's legacy of diamonds. "You had best take these with you, Harry," says she. "I have no need of diamonds anymore." There was not the least token of emotion in her quiet low voice. She held out the black shagreen case with her fair arm, that did not shake in the least. Esmond saw she wore a black velvet bracelet on it, with my Lord Duke's picture in enamel. He had given it her, but 3 days before he fell. Esmond said the stones were his no longer, and strove to turn off that proffered restoration with a laugh: "Colon of what good," says he, "are they to me?" The diamond loop to his hat did not set off Prince Eugene, and will not make my yellow face look any handsomer. "You will give them to your wife, cousin," says she. "Why, cousin, your wife has a lovely complexion and shape." "Beatrix," Esmond burst out, the old fire flaming out as it would at times, "will you wear those trinkets at your marriage? You whispered once you did not know me. You know me better now. How I sought, what I have sighed for 10 years, what for gone? A price for your constancy, my lord," says she. "Such a prix chevalier wants to be paid. Oh fie, cousin!" Again, Esmond spoke out, "If I do something you have at heart, something worthy of me and you, something that shall make me a name with which to endow you, will you take it? There was a chance for me once, you said. Is it impossible to recall it? Never shake your head, but hear me. Say you will hear me a year hence. If I come back to you, and bring you fame, will that please you? If I do what you desire most, what he who is dead desired most, will that soften you? What is it, Henry?" says she, her face lighting up. "What mean you?" "Ask no questions," he said. "Wait, and give me but time. If I bring back, that you long for, that I have a thousand times heard you pray for, will you have no reward for him who has done you that service? Put away those trinkets. Keep them. It shall not be at my marriage, it shall not be at yours. But if man can do it, I swear a day shall come when there shall be a feast in your house, and you shall be proud to wear them. I say no more now. Put aside these words, and lock away yonder box until the day when I shall remind you of both. All I pray of you now is, to wait and to remember." "You are going out of the country?" says Beatrix, in some agitation. "Yes, tomorrow," says Esmond. "To Lorraine, cousin?" says Beatrix, laying her hand on his arm. 'Twas the hand on which she wore the Duke's bracelet. "Tay, Harry," continued she, with a tone that had more despondency in it than she was accustomed to show, "hear a last word. I do love you. I do admire you. Who would not, that has known such love as yours has been for us all? But I think I have no heart. At least I have never seen the man that could touch it, and, had I found him, I would have followed him in rags had he been a private soldier, or to sea, like one of those buccaneers you used to read to us about when we were children. I would do anything for such a man, bear anything for him. But I never found one. You were ever too much of a slave to win my heart. Even my Lord Duke could not command it. I had not been happy had I married him. I knew that 3 months after our engagement, and was too vain to break it. Oh, Harry!" I cried once or twice, not for him, but with tears of rage, because I could not be sorry for him. I was frightened to find I was glad of his death, and were I joined to you, I should have the same sense of servitude, the same longing to escape. We should both be unhappy, and you the most, who are as jealous as the Duke was himself. I tried to love him. I tried, indeed I did. Affected gladness when he came. Submitted to hear when he was by me, and tried the wife's part I thought I was to play for the rest of my days. But half an hour of that complaisance wearied me, and what would a lifetime be? My thoughts were away when he was speaking, and I was thinking, oh, that this man would drop my hand, and rise up from before my feet. I knew his great and noble qualities, greater and nobler than mine a thousand times, as yours are, cousin, I tell you, a million and a million times better. but 'twas not for these I took him. I took him to have a great place in the world, and I lost it. I lost it, and do not deplore him, and I often thought, as I listened to his fond vows and ardent words, oh, if I yield to this man, and meet the other, I shall hate him and leave him. I am not good, Harry. My mother is gentle, and good like an angel. I wonder how she should have had such a child. She is weak, but she would die, rather than do a wrong. I am stronger than she, but I would do it out of defiance. I do not care for what the parsons tell me with their droning sermons. I used to see them at court as mean, and as worthless as the meanest woman there. Oh, I am sick and weary of the world. I wait but for one thing, and when 'tis done, I will take Frank's religion and your poor mother's, and go into a nunnery, and end like her. Shall I wear the diamonds then? They say the nuns wear their best trinkets the day they take the veil. I will put them away as you bid me. Farewell, cousin. Mama is pacing the next room racking her little head, to know what we have been saying. She is jealous, all women are. I sometimes think that is the only womanly quality I have. Farewell. Farewell, brother. She gave him her cheek as a brotherly privilege. The cheek was as cold as marble. Esmond's mistress showed no signs of jealousy when he returned to the room where she was. S.E. had schooled herself so as to look quite inscrutably when S.E. had a mind. Amongst her other feminine qualities, S.E. had that of being a perfect dissembler. He rode away from Castlewood to attempt the task he was bound on, and stand or fall by it. In truth, his state of mind was such that he was eager for some outward excitement to counteract that gnawing malady which he was inwardly enduring. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.